This is Cole Zimmerman, and I'm a sales agronomist for CHS Ag Services in Warren, Minnesota. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Wednesday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Tyler Donaldson here in the studio with your headlines. We'll also be hearing a report from Don Wick in Nashville for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association Cattle Convention. And that Cattle Convention 2026 underway in Nashville. Attendance for this year's event is topping 9,000 strong. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Don Wick is included in that crowd and has this report.
Tyler, it's been said the current cattle market is both strong and fragile. We've seen record money, but that also increases the risk and volatility for the cattle producer. Ag Country Farm Credit Services Senior Vice President Marshall Hansen leads the organization's corporate protein team. He says this environment tests everyone involved in the cattle business.
I would like to say we're all playing the same game that we have been, just with bigger numbers, right, or more zeros, but the reality is that it just takes more capital to do the things that we've done historically. And so we all have to make sure that we're prepared to make those decisions and to make the investments into the industry that we all need to in order to make sure that we can continue to support our customers.
Hansen advises cattle producers to look globally to find ways to manage risk and minimize the impact to the balance sheet if something unexpected happens.
A product like LRP, for example, has become wildly popular, and in fact, you know, organizations like NCBA are looking at how can we expand those products into other sectors. We were having a conversation yesterday about are there some opportunities to use LRP type products in the bred heifer markets, in the cow markets, in the cull cow markets. And so I think that the adoption has been really good, and I think that your innovative producers who are looking for ways to minimize risk and protect their balance sheets, they're embracing those and finding them very useful.
In addition to a massive trade show, policy meetings and educational workshops are on the schedule today. Our coverage from CattleCon 2026 is sponsored by the North Dakota Stockmen's Association, North Dakota Beef Commission, and Minnesota Beef Council. From Nashville, I'm Don Wick on the Red River Farm Network.
Beef checkoff dollars have been used to advance STEM learning in schools. That's science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, done through the prism of animal agriculture. Wishick Dairy farmer Denise Rowweeder is a member of the North Dakota Beef Commission.
There are several programs, but most of them are at that middle school level where they're doing those STEM projects in the science classes, when teachers are most likely to allow them to base their own opinions on what they want to do for the rest of their life, and they're figuring out what they want to be. So it's a great opportunity to get to those consumers at that age.
This educational effort can also capture a customer for beef.
More of a protein-based diet is what the younger generations are focusing on, and if we can get the information out there that beef is one of the best, if not the best, protein source for these kids, it'll build that lifelong habit for them.
Rowweeder is participating in this week's CattleCon in Nashville. The $1 per head beef checkoff investment does not go as far as it did 40 years ago when it was established. In Minnesota, a vote will be held this spring to increase the state checkoff rate. Three public hearings have been held. Minnesota Beef Council Executive Director Kelly Schmidt says it's important for beef producers to be identified for this referendum vote.
Make sure you're on that list, and you can do that by calling our office, or there's a very simple form on the website. Fill it out. Even if you're not sure you're on there, we can double check it and make sure you are. Those names have to be collected actually by the end of next week. By the 13th, we have to have those names to the Department of Ag, and then they double check everything, and then the ballots get mailed in the end of March. So they're going to be mailed the very end of March, and then there'll be a three-week period where producers can fill out that ballot with the referendum question on it, and board elections are also on there. Send it back, and then we'll know probably closer to the 1st of May by the time they count everything. So,
if approved, the new checkoff rate would be in place this summer.
If it has a successful vote, it really goes into law as soon as the Commissioner of Ag gets it signed, and I believe it has to flow through the governor's office. But then it's pretty much in law right away, and collections can start then right away.
President Donald Trump posted on Truth Social this morning that he had a very positive phone call with Chinese President Xi Jinping, in which China agreed to boost purchases of U.S. soybeans this season to about 20 million tons. The move lifted soybean futures in the early portion of the day's trade, double digits higher into midday. Despite the reaction, analysts note that past Chinese purchase pledges have not always translated into sustained orders. And structural market factors, including cheaper South American supplies and tariffs on U.S. beans, could limit long-term increases. AgMarket.net market analyst Matt Bennett says the boost soybeans received this morning following President Trump's Truth Social post is just short-term. The long-term outlook for soybeans has not changed much.
Given that it's a cash situation where a lot of guys are sitting on old beans, you know, we've been thinking, why not take advantage of that kind of pop, you know, because ultimately it doesn't change the world balance sheet at all. And you know, some of our thought is that maybe we do sell a few more beans to China, but that doesn't take away the fact that Brazil has a huge crop coming. And you may end up seeing beans or bean meal, you know, work its way into the Southeast U.S. if China buys more U.S. beans. So I don't really think fundamentally it changes a whole lot, but sure, it's nice to see that kind of volatility and upper price movement because, you know, it gets things shaken just a little bit.
The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency is revamping its feedlot rules. According to Minnesota State Cattlemen's Association Executive Director Caitlin Root, this will be a multi-year process.
They're establishing a few working groups. One of those working groups will be feedlot owners that the MPCA will be putting together. So there's going to be legal review, governor's review, more public hearings before this is actually done, but they have identified more of a scope of what these rules will be encompassing, and they're definitely all encompassing. The MPCA is looking at possibly changing and adjusting many areas when it comes to these rules.
Reporting Agriculture's Business, you are listening to the Red River Farm Network. Farm news on the Red River Farm Network. South Dakota legislature is underway, and one of the bills introduced, House Bill 1077, would consider cultivated protein food products to be adulterated foods. South Dakota District 18 Representative Julie Ock, one of the bill's sponsors, spoke about the need for such regulation in the state.
Cell cultivated protein is not only fake meat, but it has not been properly studied or proven to be safe or healthy for human consumption. Countries and states have banned this product to protect not only the consumer, but the traditional livestock sector in their state. I wholeheartedly believe in free market. I am a business owner, and a customer is always king. But let's join states like Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, Indiana, Texas, and Montana, all who have passed similar legislation to protect their consumers, farmers, and ranchers.
RCAF USA Vice President Eric Groper also spoke in favor of the bill.
The cattle industry in our state is the biggest segment of agriculture, and it's also the biggest segment nationwide. I guess I look at the fake meat industry or the so-cultured meat industry as trying to replace us. My main concern is three multinational beef packers who are all heavily invested in this are going to use it just like they do import beef and blend it with our safe, wholesome USA beef. The more they blend, the less of my cattle they need. It's vertical integration. It's going to be an end to animal agriculture as we know it.
The bill passed on a split 4-3 committee vote and will next move to the House floor for voting. Farmer confidence plunged sharply in January, with Purdue University's latest ag economy barometer falling 23 points to 113, as both current conditions and future expectations weakened markedly. Producers reported worsening financial conditions compared with a year ago, rising concerns about farm finances and export competitiveness, and a drop in planned capital investments. Farmers across the Northern Plains continue to face financial pressure from low margins and market uncertainty. At the Northern Corn and Soybean Expo in West Fargo, Senior Research Associate with the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute, Ben Brown, shared his outlook on the current farm economy.
I would say that producers remain concerned about some of the challenges that we see out there. It's a mixed economy because we've had years of strong yields coupled with low prices, so that creates a sense of frustration. You know, we see a diversification or a dichotomy across our industry in terms of those with livestock that are producing liquidity and cash reserves to help maybe support some of the crop enterprises, which is a reversal of where we were just 4 or 5 years ago, where cattle prices were low and input costs, namely feed, were high. So, you know, a mixed kind of bag across the spectrum from that standpoint.
Brown says financial stress is being felt across many operations, especially after several strong income years were followed by weaker margins.
One of the things that comes out is we're loss averse as an industry. And what that means is that losing something is 2.5 times more painful than gaining the exact same object, right? And so the way I talk about this, and the reason I think this is relevant, is we had a prolific period, 2021, 22, where incomes were relatively strong in row crop production. We needed to find a way to manage that money. So we bought equipment, we took on some more land, right? Now we're in a period where we might have to sell some of that, either that land or that equipment, and to sell that is 2.5 times more painful. So that's why we're seeing the pain and hearing about the challenges in agriculture. They're very real, but from a behavioral-based standpoint, they're more painful than when we gained them a couple of years ago.
Brown says despite current challenges, agriculture remains cyclical and long-term opportunities still exist for producers willing to manage risk and adapt to changing market conditions. A bipartisan group of former farm leaders and USDA officials warned Congress that the U.S. farm economy is in crisis, calling current conditions a widespread collapse of American agriculture. The group, which includes former heads of the National Corn Growers Association, Renewable Fuels Association, and National Milk Producers Federation, including Harold Woolley, Jim Mulhern, and Bob Dineen, as well as Randy Doyle, urged lawmakers to act immediately to support farmers. In a letter to House and Senate Agriculture Committee leadership, the 27 signatories cited rising input costs, lost export markets, and weakened trade partnerships, as well as cuts to USDA staffing and research as key threats. Farmer bankruptcies have doubled. Barely half of all farms will be profitable this year, and the U.S. is running a historic agriculture trade deficit, the letter states. This is the Red River Farm Network. Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. Farming decisions made this season can impact operations for years to come. Syngenta Corn Trade's technical product lead Todd McRoberts says long-term planning is becoming increasingly important as growers face more complexity in production.
When we look at farming decisions today, they often have a ripple effect across multiple seasons, not just the one crop year. And then as we look at input complexity, resistance management, regulatory pressures, all these things come into play in planning from season to season. Also, when you look at long-term strategies that help growers protect yield potential while managing risk and variability, these things take planning. And as we look at growers aligning genetics and traits and agronomic practices, they need to do that more intentionally. Because if you get caught 1 year with forgetting something, it can throw a wrench in your operation.
McRoberts says successful planning starts with understanding field history, selecting the right hybrids and traits, and managing weeds, insects, and disease across crop rotations. He adds that aligning fertility, planting practices, and crop protection as a system helps protect future options.
But it also requires more thoughtful adoption. New traits and genetics are designed to work as part of an integrated system, and then planning ahead helps growers maximize the value of innovation, not just reacting to challenges. Innovation paired with stewardship can support both performance and longevity in their farming operation. One key thing is take time to evaluate your goals, the challenges and long-term priorities you have. Lean on your trusted local advisors for agronomic advice. Focus on building systems over just a one-year solution. For launches like Durastack, observing cornfields with corn overpressure now can show whether these traits like Durastack are the best field fit for a specific grower.
McRoberts says building long-term systems and working closely with local advisors can help growers manage risk, protect yields, and get the most out of new technologies. Checking quotes, May wheat Minneapolis down 2 cents at 579.5. Chicago May wheat's 2.25 lower at 535.5. KC March hard red winter wheat 4.5 down to 530.25. March corn up 0.25 cent, 428.75. March soybeans 26.25 higher at 1092. In Winnipeg, March canola's up 880 per metric ton to 658.10 Canadian. February live cattle are 32 cents higher. March feeders up $1.82, February hogs 45 cents lower. This is the Red River Farm Network.